Welcome to Sophisticated Property Investing, a podcast brought to you by Ethical Property Partners, the experts in sophisticated property investment.
Hi there, ladies and gents, and welcome to the Sophisticated Property Investing Podcast. I'm Frank Flegg, the founder of EPP, the place where we help our franchisees to make their annual returns from property on a monthly basis. The next couple of podcast episodes are actually audio taken from a series of YouTube videos I've been working on recently that explain the four phases of developing and growing your property business. We'll do a deep dive on each of them. On this episode, you'll hear about phase four and phase three. Then we'll cover phase two and phase one in the next show, and the reason for working backwards rather than forwards will become evident. Now, I've recently spent two and a half hours helping our franchisees to understand the four phases of a sophisticated property investment business. Now, actually, they're the four phases of any property investment business. But as you know, at EPP, we're all about the sophisticated investing, the no money down investing, the using other people's money investing, which enables us to do an infinite number of transactions. Now, the four phases sound really simple, but they're not at all. So in this series, I'm going to do four videos where I explain each of the phases in detail, because it's so important that at the start of your journey, in the middle of your journey, and at the end of your journey, you are working on all four phases simultaneously. And people don't. People get wrapped up in the phase that they're in, even though they don't know what phase they're in, and they keep doing the do and they're on the hamster wheel. They can actually lose sight of what's coming up in the latter phases, and that can mean that they come unstuck and made bankrupt, repossessed, etc. So the four phases of your property investment business are this. You're either starting out. So at the start, you're getting your first few deals under your belt. You might have one, you might have three, you might have four, but you're still starting out. You're cutting your teeth. You're learning how to actually do deals. Not a hard phase at all. Many people get stuck because they don't know the system, they don't know how to take action, they haven't got the confidence, their mentality's not there. But we'll come on to how to start in one of the later episodes. Then you've got building your portfolio. So you've done three, four, five deals already, and now you're building your portfolio. You're up to 20, 30, 50 and beyond properties in your portfolio. Now, people here often get stuck because they're loving it and they're feeling like they're successful and they're building their portfolio. However, what a lot of people in phase two forget to do is to focus on phase three and phase four. Now, phase three is protecting your net worth, protecting your portfolio, absolutely critical. We did a session at our monthly training day recently where we came up with over 30 threats to our businesses. So over 30 things that can go wrong. And some of them are really likely, like raised interest rates. And some of them are fairly unlikely, like a war. But actually, the combination of all those 30 risks is one or two or three are highly likely to happen, because the probability gets more and more likely the more risks you have. Some of them are, as I say, black swan events, and some of them are almost certain to happen. And so protecting your portfolio against those 30 plus risks is really important, and I'll do an episode on that. The final phase, and the one that I'm going to focus on today, is finishing your business. Now, you might think to yourself, if you're only buying your second or third or even your very first buy-to-let investment, why should you be fussed about finishing it? And when I say finishing your business, I'm talking about how will your business look when you are 80 years old? And we were chatting at the training day on Tuesday, and some of the guys were saying, well, for me, that's only 15 years time. And others were saying, well, for me, that's like a lot of years time, that's 50 odd years time. It doesn't matter. Stephen Covey, in his very famous Seven Habits book, says that you need to start with the end in mind. So if you're starting with the end in mind for your property business, then you need to be really, really consciously thinking about what you yourself want to be doing when you're 80 years old. And for some, it will be you've sold your portfolio. You've now only got cash in the bank. But here's the thing. what will that cash in the bank be earning you as a monthly interest rate? What will your monthly income be from that amount of cash? Because I know when I was starting off in business, people were able to put money into fixed rate bonds at around 7 or 8%. Good luck finding a fixed rate bond at 7 or 8% today. It's almost impossible to get a 2% bond today. And so the people that were relying on that 8% were actually receiving less than a quarter of that just a few short years later because of the credit crunch in 2008, 2009, 2010. And that comes into the protecting your net worth and protecting your cash flow and your standard of living. And so how much money will you have from selling your portfolio? How many properties will you have when you are finished with your business? How many hours a week will you work when you are finished with your business? For me, I will never finish working in property. Nothing fills me with more dread than the thought of waking up in the morning and the only thing I've got to do that day is walk to the newsagents and buy a newspaper. I think retirement is over-anticipated and under-enjoyed, quite frankly. And so, do I want to be working as hard as I work today in 40 years' time? I'm 39. So in 41 years' time, do I want to work as hard as I am today? No, I don't. But will I still want to be doing deals? Will I still want to be meeting people? Absolutely. Now, I probably won't be doing a deal a month. I might be doing a deal or two a year. They probably won't be massive deals. I certainly won't be betting the farm in my 80s. But will I want to keep my mind sharp? Will I want to keep active? Will I want to have a purpose? Absolutely, I will. And we had a discussion on Tuesday about how many hours that is. And for some people, it was 3 or 4 hours a day. For some people, it was 3 or 4 hours a week. For some people, it was 3 or 4 hours a month. And you need to decide what is right for you. Now, you don't have to then set it in stone and not change it for 30 or 40 years, but you do need to decide on it today so you know what you're aiming for. You can course correct later, but unless you know what you're aiming for, you're just wandering. You are directionless. And so you're not going to end up where you want to get to if you're directionless. You wouldn't get in the car, turn the sat-nav on and not put in a postcode and just hope to drive around and arrive at your destination. That would be crazy. But that's what people do in their lives, and that's what people do in their property businesses. And so when you're thinking about finishing your business, how many team members will you have? How many properties will you have? What kind of monetization strategies will you have on those properties? Will you have any lending on them? So one of the guys on Tuesday said he wanted 300 properties unencumbered, and he wanted to have a business that was flipping, I think he said, 4 properties a month. And after we discussed that, we discussed it quite depth. We spent about 20 minutes as a group of us, about 15, 16 of us on Tuesday. And we went into quite some depth. And at the end of that discussion, he realized that the business that was going to be flipping the properties was going to be really complicated. It was going to need a CEO. It was going to need quite a lot of management and leadership, and actually wasn't going to make tons and tons of money. Whereas the business, and he would probably keep getting sucked back into it, and he didn't want to have to work in that business. He was one of the guys that was happy to work like a couple hours a day. The other business, which was his portfolio, 300 properties, he realized that actually his standard of living on unencumbered properties would probably be hit by about 100 properties. You know, what he wants in his life, what he wants to be able to spend and give to good causes and live the life that he wants to live when he's 80, would actually be hit quite easily by 100 unencumbered properties. So he realized that he was aiming for this and incorporating all this complexity, whereas actually, if he just focused on this, he'd be absolutely fine, and perhaps he could even rein that in. Now, he's decided to keep it at 300 properties because he's worked out that he only has to buy X number of properties a year and he'll hit 300 quite easily. Then he needs to start paying down those mortgages so that when he's 80, they're unencumbered properties. And that's the key. One of the greats, I think it's John Paul Getty from the States, one of the great entrepreneurs of the last century, I think, said that there is no better investment than unencumbered property, because it goes up in value and you get an income from it. And if you don't have lending, then there's practically zero risk from it. And that's why most people, when they wrote down their finished business, were saying that it was unencumbered property. Now for you, it may not be 100 properties or 300 properties. If you think about it, an unencumbered property, depending on where you are in the country, can be anything from 350 odd pounds a month to several thousand pounds a month. But if we just pick £1,000 a month as an average rent for an average area, how many thousand pounds a month do you need to see you through your retirement? And you might think, well, my standard of living is quite modest. I only need £10,000 a month to live on. It's quite easy to spend £10,000 a month, but you know, if you're not into your fast cars, you're not wanting to go on five-star holidays all the time, and you're not into your watches and your bling, 10 grand a month is pretty livable. It's a pretty good standard of living. That's 10 unencumbered properties. That's really easy to achieve by the age of 80, or the age of 70, or the age of 60, depending on when you're starting and what you're starting with. Now, we have a five-year franchise. The reason it's 5 years, or one of the reasons it's 5 years, is because it takes a bit of time to buy deals. But generally, our franchisees are buying deals not unencumbered. They're buying them with other people's money. So there's some lending on those. But you can build a portfolio, you can start selling some of the properties, the rental income and the profitability starts to snowball, starts to accumulate, and that will enable them to pay off some of their lending and build an unencumbered portfolio. Now you might think to yourself, yeah, but £10,000 today won't be £10,000 a month in 40 years' time. But it will. And the reason it will is one of the beauties of property. Property keeps pace with inflation, which is fantastic. So if a loaf of bread today is £1 and the rent on a property is £1,000, and in 40 years' time a loaf of bread is £2, rent on the property is most likely going to be £2,000, because the cost of living goes up, inflation goes up, the consumer price index, etc. So property's inflation proof. Now if that property was worth £200,000 today, the likelihood is it's going to be worth around £400,000 at that point in the future. Now what we do see more often than not is house prices outpace inflation quite significantly. So perhaps it wouldn't be worth £400,000, perhaps it'd be £600,000 or £800,000, especially if a property cycle is 10 years. But it doesn't matter, because those figures are in your favour. Property keeps pace with inflation, which means you can do all your calculations based on today's values, knowing that yes, your expenses will actually be higher, but your incomes will be correspondingly higher as well, because property keeps pace with inflation. And so when designing your finished business, you need to think about what will your diary look like. And I mean, map out a week in your life, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, 8 a.m., 10 a.m., 12, 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, and put in what your perfect week would look like. And then get a year and put in 52 weeks and map in what your perfect year would look like. How many holidays are you going to have? Where are you going to spend your life? Are you going to be in Portugal for 3 months? Are you going to be in Britain for June, July, August? Are you going to go skiing in the winter? Are you going to spend December in Canada, for example? Map out what your perfect year looks like. Map out what your perfect week looks like. And that will give you that clarity. Because too often, we put into our goals, and Tony Robbins talks about this a lot, we put into our goals what we think is possible, not what we really want. And there's a lot of influence on us, there's a lot of pressure on us to want certain things. To say, well, you know, I want to have a Rolls Royce, or I want to not work anymore, or I want to live overseas, or whatever those pressures might be from society. I want to live in a big house. Why? Why do you want to live in a big house? What if you just lived in a one-bedroom flat? and actually could retire 20 years earlier. Would that be worth it to you? I talk about my dad sometimes. I don't think my dad's bought a new piece of clothing for as long as I've been alive. He buys all of his clothing in charity shops. That's neither good nor bad. It means, though, for him, that he could retire decades earlier than most people. And so it's a choice. And so when you're mapping out your finished business, you need to decide, when are you going to work? How much are you going to work? What are you actually going to do? So whilst you're building wealth, you might want to have HMOs in your portfolio. You might want to have service accommodation. You might want to be doing rent to rent. You might have some really time intensive strategies. You might want to do flipping. You might want to do development. But when you're 80 years old, you're probably not going to want a business that is that complex, because you're probably, even though you may have team, and if you don't have team, you're probably going to have letting agents and subcontractors doing the do for you. So you're probably just going to have a strategic impact on your business. You're probably not going to be that heavily involved in operations. And if you think it's not possible, so you say, no, I'll still be involved. The letting agents can still phone me if they need to talk about a boiler or they need to talk about, you know, a tenant being evicted. Think about that for a minute. Is that what you really want? Whilst you're in Canada for December, do you really want phone calls from your letting agents saying, Freddie bought too many toys for his kids, so he hasn't paid his rent. Do you want us to serve a Section 8? Or would you rather that just got sorted for you? Would you rather someone else made that decision and at the end of the year you just made your 200 grand, your 500 grand, whatever your figure is that you want in order to be able to live? And so please, when you're doing this, think from the perspective of what do I want, not what do I think is possible. Because I'll be honest with you, anything is possible given 40 years. Just let that sink in for a minute. Anything is possible by the time you're 80. And if you're sat there thinking I'm 65, I haven't got 40 years, don't worry about it. I'll be able to find you someone in the world that was in a worse situation than you are right now, from a financial, mental health, physical, whatever you believe your limiting factors are. I will be able to find you someone in the world that was worse off than you right now are and achieved what you're thinking is impossible before you want to achieve it. And that is a really powerful thought. And the one that comes back to me over and over again is Colonel Sanders, forget the guy's pronunciation of his name, the guy that started Kentucky Fried Chicken, KFC. He was in his 60s. He went to hundreds of chicken restaurants, chicken joints, and basically said, I've got a better recipe for chicken than you have. Do you want to franchise my chicken recipe? And any of you that have been in franchising, obviously I'm in franchising, I consult and help other business owners to get into franchising and help them to transform their businesses into franchises. Anyone who's got any experience with franchising knows that's a tough sale. And unsurprisingly, in his 60s, he had to go and see a lot of restaurants, hundreds of them. But look at his legacy now. Look at the success he's had in turning that one little chicken recipe into a global brand. Unbelievably successful, unbelievably. And so it doesn't matter if you want to make £1 million. It doesn't matter if you want to run a marathon. It doesn't matter if you want 300 unencumbered properties. It's possible because someone has done it. I think it was Einstein that said, whatever could be conceived can be created. And I think that's true. And it's certainly true in your property business. So how much are you going to work? When are you going to work? What will you be doing? It doesn't matter if you've used all this time intensive, energy intensive strategies to create your wealth. You can then sell them off, simplify them, repurpose them as single ASTs in order to have a simple business that doesn't require your direct involvement, doesn't require any reactionary time whatsoever, only prophylactic time, only time that you choose to invest in the zone on the business when you choose to invest it. Who will you have working for you? if you have no one working for you, you're going to do your own tax returns, you're going to deal with your own issues, you're going to have to chase solicitors. Is that what you want for yourself? Wouldn't you love to have a PA working for you 8 hours a day, just making your life easier? I have a full-time PA in Serbia. She's phenomenal. She reads my emails for me. She sorts out insurances for me. She liaises with my team, my solicitors, my letting agents, my bookkeepers. She just makes my life easier. It's fantastic to have people doing the work you don't want to do, doing the work you're not very good at. I'm not very good at checking my emails every day. So what I get is she reads them for me, she responds to the 95% of them, and the few each week that I need to respond to, she pops in a special inbox that sits there ready for me to read. I get a little WhatsApp message, Frank, there's an email in there, it needs reading before Friday this week. When you have a finished business, you need to work towards that. You need to decide what you want, because anything is possible. That is phase four. If you haven't done this before, go do it now. It's not a 5 minute exercise. It might take you half an hour. It might take you half an hour today, and then you spend another half an hour next week refining it. But it's never finished. Don't think, well, I don't know, so I won't start. No, you have to start. You have to start somewhere. And then your subconscious mind will start thinking about what you've written down, and you'll start to get some clarity. Where do you want to live? What do you want to spend your time doing? I know that I will want to exercise every day for the rest of my life. I love exercising. I also know that I want to do some work every day for the rest of my life. Doesn't mean I want to have to work. I certainly don't want to be like some of the pensioners you see in the supermarkets still working, stacking shelves. That won't appeal to me, no judgment. You know, they might love the social interaction, etc. But for me, I want to be able to choose whether to work every day. I want to have that opportunity to be purposeful, to be productive. I will definitely be involved in my Stepping Stones project for the rest of my life. I love the fact that we've housed over 200,000 homeless people to date. I look forward to that being 1 million, to it being 2 million nights when people have slept in one of our beds rather than on the streets. And so that legacy, that purpose to your life, doesn't come overnight. It takes time to work it out, but start working on it today, because for as long as you haven't got clarity on where you're headed, you have turned the sat nav on in your car and you're driving around randomly hoping to arrive at your destination. Put in the name of the town, put in the name of the village. You can put the street name in and the exact postcode later, but start headed in a direction, because otherwise you're just meandering. And the problem with meandering is you're never going to get to where you want to get to. So that's finishing your business, guys. That's phase four. In the next episode of this four-episode series that we're putting on for you, I'm going to work backwards. So we've done finishing, which is phase four. We're going to look at protecting your net worth. So during the journey, from where you are today to where you are when you finish your business, aged 80 or 90 or 100, how are you going to protect your net worth? How are you going to protect your portfolio? So what kind of risks are you protecting yourself against, or what kind of risk do you need to protect yourself against that you haven't done already? Now, some of you might have tenant insurance. You might have protected your tenancies by going to a rent guarantee company, or you might have taken out landlord's insurance. Most of you will have insured the properties because that's a legal requirement, but some of you would have protected the tenancies. My argument for that is, you know, if you have a large enough portfolio, you can self-insure for stuff like that. But what lots of people don't think about is the longer term black swan events that actually, black swan events, by the way, are events that are very rare but have very severe consequences. For example, the tsunami in, I think it was 2004 in Japan, or the pandemic that's come around that has been predicted by quite a few people that we will have at some point a pandemic, or it could be the strength of the pound going up or the pound being devalued. It could be that the housing market crashes and people say, well, you know, what's the chances? on a singular basis, a singular event, really low probability of us going to war, for example, or compliance changing. So the government perhaps bringing in regulated rents. We had it in the past. Could we have it in the future? Compulsory purchasing of second properties, for example, or perhaps the income being taxed much more highly from investment properties. And you might think, oh, what's the chances of that? There's a lot of chatter at the moment about capital gains tax being brought in line with income tax. For a higher rate taxpayer, that's a jump from 28% capital gains tax with a massive tax-free amount. If you're married, you can get a tax-free amount of £25,000, 28%, taking away the tax-free amount and jumping up to 45%. So some of these risks are quite draconian. What about the government bringing in some kind of additional levy on your business profits? Or how about they stop you getting relief from some of your expenses? And you go, no, you only pay tax on the profits, Frank. Well, that's not what happened a few years ago. A few years ago, the government popped up and said, actually, as a residential landlord, we are going to make you the only business in the UK that gets taxed before their expenses are deducted. And that's the mortgage rate relief changes. That's the Section 24 mortgage rate relief that's been removed. So now you can actually be a loss-making landlord. You can have a property that loses you money, but you still have to pay tax to the government. That is impossible in any other business in the country, to the best of my knowledge. And so these risks that we're mitigating against are real risks. The government has just out of thin air decided to bring out a tax on developers. You may have read about this. It's to pay for the cladding crisis that we have in the country on flats. But hang on, who made the rules about cladding? Well, it was the government and the quangos and the legislators. And so that problem was created completely innocently, but you know, government's job is to keep us safe, etc. Created completely innocently by the government, the developers built to the building regulations. But the building regulations weren't correct. They were unsafe. I think everyone can agree on that. And so now the government, to be fair to them, they've put £5 billion into the pot to improve the situation and to rectify the buildings that are currently unmortgageable and unsellable. But they've also said that any developer above £25 million profit will have to pay an additional 4% tax on their profit. Overnight, 4%. Now that's big. Now you might think to yourself, I'm not making £25 million in profit, what's it matter? But these things can just come in overnight. That came in last week in the budget. I didn't know that was going to happen. I'm not a developer that makes £25 million a year, so it's not going to affect me. In fact, it might help me because I am a developer and I do build houses in competition with the big boys, and now I've got a 4% advantage over them. But they still have plenty of advantages. I don't think they're sat there in their beds worried about Frank and his one or two house developments. But my point is, anything can happen. What about those black swan events? Now, I'm not going to list all of them for you, but you need to be thinking about what might happen. So if property prices were devalued, what if mortgage lenders called in some of their loans? If you read the small print in your mortgage terms and conditions, they are incredibly draconian. Did you know that if you sold a property, most mortgage terms and conditions can keep 100% of the proceeds? Even if you've only got a 60% loan to value mortgage, most mortgage lenders have in their T's and C's that if you sell a property for 100% of its market value, they can keep the equity and offset it against other properties that they also have mortgages on in your name without you being able to do anything for it. They just whack up the redemption figure and retain all the money. So if you think, well, if rents drop or if rent regulation comes in, that's okay because I'll sell a few properties. It may not be as simple as that. And the problem with these black swan events is this: when one happens, often there's a cascade, because then some other unlikely things happen because people panic, and you only have to look at the recent COVID-19 outbreak to see that that's the case. So how can you protect? I've probably scared you with what can happen, but remember, this can happen in any walk of life. We're not isolating this to property. Your employment can cease. You can get ill. And that was one that we spent quite a lot of time on Tuesday. What if you get ill? Have you insured against critical illness? Have you insured against death so that your spouse and your children, etc., are not lumbered with a massive headache? A portfolio that's in the building phase can actually be a massive headache for those left behind at a time when they're grieving, when they're struggling to cope with an already very emotional situation. And so, have you got critical illness cover in place? Have you got death insurance? Have you got life insurance in place? Have you mitigated against other risks? So, for example, what's your loan to value across your portfolio? If it's at 75, 80, 85%, that's possibly a bit too highly geared for an aggressive building phase. Now, it does depend on your cash reserves, but have you got cash reserves? Have you got 6 months of mortgage payments across your whole portfolio sat in a bank account in case something goes wrong? Now, you might think, oh, what could go wrong? Do you know what? There's a million things that could go wrong. The legislation on evicting tenants is changing all the time. Do you know if you don't give an EPC to a tenant, it can void that tenancy? That tenant can actually sue you for all the rent they've paid on that tenancy. And it for something as simple as an EPC, or failing to give them one. Now, you might give it to them, but if you haven't got a signature from them saying, yes, I've received it, how can you prove you've given it to them? Now, that might sound very draconian, but it is the law, as I understand it, and I've spoken to lawyers about this. It's never actually happened to me. But what if some massive law firm comes out with a no-win, no-fee and goes after all the landlords in the country or starts chipping away at them and it snowballs, it goes onto Facebook, and then lots of tenants try it on because they can suddenly get 6 months rent for free or refunded to them. So it's important to recognize that however good a business model is, and property is amazing, it's absolutely amazing, we need to be mitigating against the unexpected happening. So talked a bit about health, we've talked a bit about having cash reserves, but what about having some money in precious metals? What about having some money in gold, for example, perhaps not held in the UK, so that it's even more diverse than you might otherwise? Now, you might be thinking, no, I'm putting all my money into property, Frank. That's fine for now, but if you're 25, 35, 45, I think it's foolish to do that for the long term. Also, if you're wanting to pay down your gearing on your portfolio, my suggestion is don't take your whole portfolio from 75% to 70%. That's not actually that much safer. You're much better to leave the majority properties at 75% and pay some off completely, so you've got some unencumbered property, because that's far more versatile than having everything at 70%. The mortgage conditions could easily change, and overnight you can't get 75% loan to value mortgages, you can now only get 70. That happened in 2009 2010. You could get mortgages, buy to let mortgages, at 85%, no problem at all. In the space of about 2 months, those products just disappeared. It was all 75% loan to value. So anyone who had their portfolio at 85% or 80% could no longer refinance. So when interest rates were going up then, it was really hard to refinance, because all of a sudden they were coming off 4%, 5% mortgages and going on to 6.5% mortgages. It was really tough to, and that could be the difference between a profitable property and an unprofitable property. And you might think, well, that's okay, I'll pop in a bit of money, I'll just, you know, top it up. But how do you top it up when you've got 50 properties or 100 properties? And that's what we're looking at. We're looking at how we can protect against threats to our business over the medium and long term. So if interest rates got to 10%, how would your portfolio fare? How long could you last? If a third of your tenants stop paying because they've lost their jobs, or perhaps because Universal Credit has run out of money and is no longer being paid, There's a lot of reasons why things could change. How robust are you? I was once listening to a property speaker actually down in London, and he said, there's a recession coming, and then there's going to be a boom in house prices. The problem is no one knows when the recession's going to be and when the boom's going to be, because that's just the property cycle. And he said, the trick is to survive the boom, as in keep buying, make your money, etc., and not get squashed like a moth in the recession. And in our next recession, we've had historically low interest rates for so long. In the next recession, and we're now heading into a period of inflation, which I've been predicting for 12, 18 months now. If you listen to the podcast, I was predicting this early 2020. I think I had my accountant on, Dave Allen, and we were chatting about how the government's going to use inflation to erode the massive debt that they've got. By the way, the government pushing inflation up erodes the government debt, but it also erodes our debts. So I have a lot of lending across a large number of properties on my portfolio. Those loans aren't getting any bigger. I'm servicing the interest on those loans. But as inflation goes up, as the cost of living goes up, my portfolio is getting more valuable. In real terms, my loans are getting less because the example I use is a loaf of bread. If I owe £100,000 to the bank on a property and a loaf of bread costs me £1 today, the real cost of that loan, the real value of that loan is a lot less in real terms if in the future a loaf of bread costs me £2, because that means that inflation has doubled, which means that my £100,000 loan in effect is now £50,000, assuming everything else has gone up by the same amount as a loaf of bread. And so these things can work in your favor and you can really do well. Inflation is going to be amazing for me because rents will go up because everything else is going up. Wages are going to go up, etc. House prices will go up. Now, we've seen a lot of house price rise and it isn't tied precisely to the consumer price index. So house prices are a bit of an anomaly, but we would expect them to go up over time if inflation is going up. And in real terms, my lending is going to get less. So my profitability will go up, subject to interest rates. My equity will go up and my loans will get smaller in real terms. That's a brilliant combination of positive factors. Now, I mentioned interest rates. They're currently at 0.1%, which means that my mortgages are anywhere between about 1.5% and 5%. I've fixed a lot of them, but a lot of them are on variable rates. The profitability of my portfolio, which has been phenomenal for the last few years, is now much worse when interest rates are at 5%, because all my variable rates that are at 0.5%, 1% above base, are now at 5.56% when they currently are at 0.6% or 1.1%. So that's going to have a big impact. But also the fixed rate products that drop off, I'm not going to be able to fix them at 3.5%, 4.5%, etc. I'm going to be fixing them higher. So you need to really consider that. And when you're thinking about this, you need to be thinking big picture, long term. The Japanese are brilliant at having 100-year business plans. And you think, why do you need a 100-year business plan? You're not around in 100 years. No, but the business will be, the longevity of the business will still be there. And so when you're thinking about this, what could change over the next 20 years? Well, using second homes as holiday lets might not be allowed. Having more than one person living, more than one household living in the same building might not be allowed. And you think, HMOs, of course they will. I tell you what, if we have COVID-22 and COVID-23 and COVID-25, pretty soon we're going to stop living with people that we're not in the same bubble as. And so if HMOs were no longer available, weren't allowed under law, how would you get your high monetization going? And so it's important to structure your portfolio now in a way that's nice and diverse. If you buy all your properties in one town, and then that town is designated as, we're going to have a new nuclear power station there, or fracking's going to be huge, or whatever it could be, we're going to compulsory purchase that town and make it a massive prison. Who knows why? You are vulnerable. If all your properties are two up, two downs in a certain county, what happens if something happens to two up, two downs? What if the roofs that they were built out of are no longer stable? What if there's a problem with, I don't know what the problem will be, but that's the beauty of black swans, or the horrificness of black swan events, is we don't know precisely what it's going to be, but it will be there. One of the most common criticisms that's leveled at me as an investor is that I'm too diverse, that I don't actually specialize in anything. So I have students come along, potential franchisees, that say, do you know what, Frank, I've got more holiday lets than you. Or I have people that have more HMO units than me. I'm not in the business of specializing in one kind of monetization strategy, because that's dangerous. Think about white collar HMOs in the pandemic. They were hammered. I know people that were at 50% occupancy. Try making money on that. Oh, hanging on by the skin of their teeth. Really, really precarious when you only have one strategy. I know people that are only developers. They don't have any buy-to-lets. And so they live and die by their next few deals. Whereas I have a single ST portfolio, I have a few HMOs, I have a big HMO, I have some small ones, I've got some holiday lets, I've got some tenant buyers, I've got some land, I'm doing some planning gain, I do the odd development, one, two a year, something like that. I've got two bedroom properties, I've got one bedroom leaseholds, I've got four bedroom freeholds, everything. And you look at it and you think, cool, that's quite diverse. We're buying a portfolio of 27 units at the moment down in the southeast. Quite high value properties. That's quite good because I've got the majority of my portfolio in the Midlands, because that's where I've largely been based. We're buying some very cheap properties up in on the east coast, east Yorkshire coast at the moment. Very cheap properties. I wouldn't have bought those at the start of my career, but now it balances my portfolio quite neatly. So it's really important to think about what's likely to change, what could change, and what's very unlikely but would perhaps be catastrophic. And then you can put that all together into a plan. Now, you're not going to protect fully against all eventualities in the next 3 months. It'd be unrealistic. But what you want to do is not, because you can't protect yourself fully, doesn't mean you shouldn't protect yourself at all. So perhaps you just get £1,000 a month of critical illness cover, just to ease the burden if you did get ill. And then next year you can get a bigger policy and it can pay you £3,000 a month. And the year after you can get a bigger policy and it'll pay you £10,000 a month. And then you're protected against critical illness. And then perhaps you need to change one of your properties. If you've got 10 at the moment and they're all on single ASTs to working couples, because that worked really well on the first one, so you did it again on the second and then you did it again on the third, perhaps you think to yourself, no, the next time one falls empty, I'm going to put a tenant in on universal credit, because a tenant on universal credit can't lose their job. Or perhaps you think to yourself, you know that nice property that overlooks the park, that's got parking not far from that theme park, or not far from that tourist resort, that tourist attraction. Next time that comes vacant, I'm going to try it as a service accommodation unit. I'm going to furnish it and see if I can get that going as an SA unit. So it's those kind of things, guys. Next time you sell a property, instead of buying another one, perhaps you pay off the mortgage on a different one, and all of a sudden you've got one unencumbered property in your portfolio that you can sell in a heartbeat, that you can sell in 48 hours if you need to and pull in a big chunk of cash. It's important, guys. And if you choose not to think about this, if you choose to just listen to this episode and think to yourself, do you know what? That's Frank just being negative, or Frank just, you know, being overly cautious. That is a criticism I get leveled at me sometimes. Then more for you when the black swan event does come around. And you lose it all, because some of you listening to this will do that. Some of you in the next 3-5 years will lose everything you have. And it's really sad. I spoke to a guy Monday this week, and he's possibly going to lose everything. He's going to lose his current project. He's potentially going to lose his own home. He's potentially going to lose some family members' homes that he's used as security. That's sad. That's really sad. And so if you want to protect against that, this episode is what you need to do. You need to be listing all of the potential threats to your business. What about if you get depressed and you can't get out of bed? What are you going to do then? Have you set it up in such a way, your business, that it continues to remain profitable, that it continues to grow without you? Or would it collapse? Have you made yourself the linchpin so that everything's on you? What if a family member got ill and you had to look after them? What if they needed 24/7 care? Do you have the resources to pay for that? If not, do you have the freedom of time and location to go look after them? Or would that just be catastrophic for your life and your business? I don't mean to be alarmist, but it's important to think about these things, because when we're thinking about the four phases of your business, there is so much time to get it right. We've talked about finishing your business, but now we're talking about protecting your business. Protect it 1% this year. Protect it 3% next year. Protect it 5% the year after. And when these things come along that flatten some of the investors that haven't thought about them, you'll be fine. And do you know what? If you're fine, you can capitalize on the market. I'm excited for house prices to go down. I'm excited for interest rates to go up. Do you know why? Because then I can buy more property, because I know that I'm in a strong position. I know that I'm protected against that happening, because I've had the forethought and the experience to say, this is quite likely. If I look back at the last 100 years, it is a cyclical property cycle. People always seem to be surprised when house prices go down. They seem to be surprised when interest rates go up. But of course, we're in a cyclical market, and so we should expect that. If we can help you with this, guys, if you have concerns about how to mitigate risk in your portfolio, if you know you're exposed and you want some help, then please do get in touch. We love to help investors, and of course, would love to hear from you. If you've got questions, pop them in the comments section below and we'll happily answer them for you, or we'll do a further video to help you.
Thanks for listening to the first part of this 2-part podcast series. Please remember to have a listen to next week's episode to hear all about phase 2 and phase 1.
Sophisticated Property Investing, a podcast brought to you by Ethical Property Partners, the experts in sophisticated property investment.